This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
BT and Sal back on the fan live from Yankee Stadium, opening day 2025. And we're down with the king topic of the day. Of course, it's Aaron Boone, the Yankees. We had Booney on to start the show back at 10 o'clock. Check it out on the free Odyssey app. Andy Pettit joined us as well. So you go back and listen to that. Aaron Judge in the cage taking some swings before BT, watching him. And the Yankees take some batting practice here ahead of their opener taking on the Brewers today. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
Been a fun day so far. BT and Sal live from opening day on the fan is brought to you by Corona, the official cerveza of Major League Baseball. Boy, I love hearing that thing smack. Smack the bat. Beautiful white baseballs. Field looks great. It's awesome.
Yeah, just get you pumped up for opening day, of course. And we talked about some of the biggest question marks going into the season. We've done this really all year long, but here it is. Today, we'll get the season underway, and you and I will have our little over-unders bet as well that we have throughout the course of the year. So I'll have to pay off last year's. You get to tell me we'll play one. I mean, at some point, we got to actually do it.
But I'll tell you, we got some. I'm not going to give them all away here, but obviously, we'll do some Yanks and Mets win totals. We'll incorporate some stuff with Judge and Soto, Lindor, Alonso, Devin Williams, Lil Volpe. Nice mixed bag. It's going to be fun.
We should also have Dave Sims joining us, I believe, this hour. And you never know who else might stop by on opening day here at the stadium. But, you know, the biggest thing for me with this Yankees team, we're working the Mets in the conversation as well here. We touched on them just a little bit before as they open their season 4 o'clock in Houston. The biggest thing for me for the Yankees is the young guys. It just depends on – I think the pitching is going to be what it's going to be. Fried, I trust. The others, not so much. They got to get healed back to get to the next step. But even before we get there with the pitching, it's the young guys in the lineup. What is Dominguez going to be? How far will Wells advance his game? And Anthony Volpe in year 3, will he take a next step? I really think a lot of what the Yankees are going to do this year, their ceiling, BT, is going to be because of those young kids. If they don't pop, then I don't think the Yankees will have great success this year.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't think we used the word linear before. It might not necessarily be linear improvement, like to think that, okay, so we've focused all winter on the Volpe emergence and Dominguez and obviously Austin Wells. Like, okay, but it doesn't mean that they're all going to come out and hit, you know, 275 or 290 in the first month. I mean, there's going to be some fluctuations because, first of all, veterans have fluctuations. I don't care how good you are. Aaron Judge, nobody better than him in the world. And he was awful the first month of the season. And, of course, he went bonkers. So I think it's going to be an interesting balance of some potential power, but I want to see the Yankees run. I want to see them run. Like, Volpe, now this, of course, coincides with can he get on base more than 29% of the time? And if he can, along with Jazz, who's here for the whole year, who stole 40 bags a year ago. I even think Austin Wells, kind of like Girardi back in the day, can give you a couple sneaky steals as a catcher. I think that they need to run Dominguez, push the envelope, make it, don't be a station-to-station team, because athletically their profile is not that.
You think the Yankees will be a more fun watch this year?
They could be. They might be.
Less fun
they very
without...
well might be. You know why? There's fewer dead spots in the batting
well,
order.
That's what I'm saying. Less fun without Soto, obviously.
I mean, Soto's a one-man show.
Okay, so let's forget that, though. Just overall, better brand of baseball?
I think it's going to be... Now, okay, so those are two different things. Entertaining, better brand of baseball. I think the answer could be yes to both. I think that certainly better brand of baseball will apply defensively and on the bases, and I'm not putting that all on Soto's doorstep at all, but I mean the players that they brought in are also pretty quick and quick twitch and good defensively, so I think they'll definitely catch the ball better.
What does that mean, quick twitch? You use that.
Quick twitch just means, you know, yeah. Come on, you know what quick twitch means.
I know.
You know? Like, it just means like Jazz is quick twitch.
Okay.
Somebody like Goldschmidt is not quick twitch, it's just like bouncy, you know, like point A to point B quick. Come on, I know you know what
I
that
mean,
means.
Yeah, I know what it means.
What, you called me out for using a scouting term?
You know,
that's not my fault that I was around baseball for 30 years. What do you want me to say? Like, quick twitch is, yeah. You know, I mean, Carl Anthony Towns is not quick twitch. Somebody okay. Like, you know, Jalen Brunson's quicker twitch. Come on.
I got it.
You right. Know, I mean, there's a certain baseball verb. It's non-negotiable, buddy. We go to the baseball, we get a chance to throw in an old baseball term. We do it.
And look, for the Mets, for me, BT and Sal on the Fan, we're live at Yankee Stadium opening day year 2025. Both the Mets and Yankees get their season underway today. All of Major League Baseball, which, by the way, is odd. I know we had the Japan series with those two games.
I didn't watch one pitch.
Me neither, so it's really opening day, but it's also odd that a game doesn't start at 1 o'clock.
It's very strange.
Yanks 305. I believe they get the season going here on American soil, if I'm not mistaken. There may be other games at 3 as well. But either way, Mets at 4 o'clock. And we touched on them before, BT. I think a huge key in their season. Look, we said the same thing about the pitching last year. I don't know if it's going to be good enough. And then it proved to not really matter. They got to the postseason. Then they were overmatched. But the pitching was tremendous in the regular season. I think the key to their lineup and in part their season is what type of production they're going to get from Pete Alonso. I really feel like if he has one of his better seasons, then it's going to take them to another level that I think they could compete with the Braves, Phillies, Dodgers, and even Yankees potentially. And if he doesn't, then I think that it's going to be an issue. It'll be a negative story all year long, more of a burden on him to a point where maybe they have to move him out of that three spot.
Oh, boy. I mean, listen, I think that Pete is going to have a really good year. I'm on the record with that. And I think he's ready to get back to his old approach, kind of using all fields. We saw a little bit of that in the playoffs, certainly with the Devin Williams home run. I think it's Vientos, though. Now, to me, yeah, last year was unacceptable for Pete Alonso. You want to, and now you're the highest paid first baseman. You can't be going 34 and 88 or 89 ribbies. It can't happen. And it won't. But to me, like, even if that did happen again, that is, unless he got hurt, God forbid, like, his floor has already been identified. Already. We don't know what the floor is. Now, to be fair, we don't necessarily even know what the ceiling is for Mark Vientos. I just think that there could be some fluctuations with Vientos, though I don't see it because I think he's an absolute stud. But I like to see a year or two, you know, one good year followed up by one reassuring year where you make the adjustments to the adjustments that are made to you. Now I'm like, okay, you're not just a promising young ascending player. You're somebody I believe is a star.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. The number to call. Let's get in some calls here, BT.
Let's jump out to Queens. Robert on the Fan with BT and Sal. What's happening, Rob?
Hi, guys. How you doing? Great, good. Great show. You guys just stole my thunder a little bit because I think that Alonzo's going to have an unreal year, and Sal, you're going to be one happy guy in that studio. But I just got to point that one thing. You know, when you guys came together, there was the question, you know, the yelling back and forth, dot, dot, dot. But, Sal, you're the best partner that BT could ever have because you just hit on it a little bit with the Twitch thing. BT is a major league ball player.
No, I'm not.
He gave... No. He told Pettit how to throw the pitch. Yeah, just throw it up there and the flow and the rubber. number one, and then number two, Sal. Yeah. And Sal, when he's telling that to himself, you're there just cracking up. And then he says, when he's talking about Jazz Chisholm, the last call, BT says, yeah, when I was coming up, if I had the chance to wear that also, he's a major league player, and you just let him play. With Tiki, he could never do that because Tiki was the player.
All right, so in our pairing, and thank you for the call, in our pairing, BT is the pro. Right, you are the Boomer to my Geo. You are the Tiki to my Evan. I mean, that's what he was saying.
Yeah,
no?
That's funny. I mean, yeah.
You did go to Marist.
Yeah, big deal. I mean, you know, I played her, and I didn't play particularly well. I love the game. I love it. And it was, I think I know the game, and I think we all know the game, and we all love the game, and that's why we're here. But yeah, I mean, of course, I guess I could throw some words out there that, you know, with Tiki, you know.
The verbiage.
If Tiki was awake, sometimes I would put Tiki to sleep. I'd make sure he was still awake.
Right, you two probably talk at all that quick twitch and all that stuff.
That was his language. He loved that.
The petted thing, though, was just you saying, giving him, it wasn't you teaching him how to pitch. It was you giving him some advice.
Well, by the way, you know why I did that?
Day.
It's advice that was given to me when I threw out the first pitch.
See?
When I was working in San Francisco, and I threw out the first pitch at the A's game, which, by the way, I got completely booed at. I mean, I got booed, and I had a good pop, though. I mean, it was like 9,000 people in the stadium for the A's game, but I had a, because I was crushing the A's on the radio, and they were awful. We were the home of the A's, my old station, and I'm just banging them every day. I'm like, you fans don't even show up. This stadium's a dilapidated piece of junk, right? I was just going hard, probably a little bit too hard.
Let's welcome in Brandon Tierney.
Yeah, my first week. Yeah, exactly. And I knew I was going to get booed, so what I did was I bought a Dennis Eckersley retro T-shirt. So I walk out to the mound. I've got this white shirt on, like a button-down. And as I'm getting booed, it's on YouTube, I rip the shirt off like a wrestler. And then I see the Eckersley A shirt. I'm not saying I got a good pop. I got a little applause. Anyway, I was told before that, you have to go, you got to try to overthrow it. And if you don't, if you try to throw a conventional strike, there's no way you're going to hit it. And I went a little high, and I definitely didn't bounce it on the corner
and
strike.
We are very different because you felt comfortable enough to offer Andy Pettit advice on a first pitch, and I wouldn't do that. I just don't feel comfortable enough to do that.
However, I
did say to his face that I used to hate him when he was pitching for the Yankees. So there's maybe that nice yin and
that's
yang.
That's true. Yeah, that's why it works out. That's funny. Let me get Alan New Hyde Park. What's up, Alan? How you doing today?
Hey, good afternoon, BT and Sal. I'm really happy to talk to you both.
Awesome.
Just a little history. I go back to Susan Wallman, and I'm in my mid-70s.
God bless you.
Sal, it's the first time I'm talking to you.
Yes.
Spoke to you before. But, Sal, we're both Ranger fans, but that's not why I called. Sal, I called to ask you this.
Yes.
You have anointed the Mets as the premier team in New York for this season. Now, this should be a very interesting baseball season in New York.
Yeah.
In New York. But I want to ask you, how do you anoint them when they haven't won anything since 1986?
Well, I haven't.
Since 1986, the Yankees have earned the right to where they are based on what they've done over the past.
But where are you getting? I'm not arguing
where
that,
you
Alan.
Get the act to anoint them as the premier
Alan,
team
Alan, where are you getting that
what?
I anointed them? Where are you getting that
from?
Come
on, you big brother. You and Tommy are the only.
No, you got the wrong guy. Cole Lugauer.
You and Tommy are the two hosts that have given the Mets this anointing.
I have not anointed them. As a matter of fact, just the other day, and thank you for the call. If they do have to, I just said that the other day, 2 days ago, we opened the show by me saying the Mets have to earn it. I could think that they're going to be good, and maybe BT and I have some fun, and we poke fun about the big brother, little brother stuff.
The King Cohen stuff.
Yeah, well, King Cohen was a different thing, and getting Juan Soto in that aspect, I think the Mets have proven to now be at the very least on equal footing with the Yankees. The problem is, the thing that matters most is winning. The Mets have to prove that. And by the way, even if the Mets went out there and won 97 games and won the division and got to a World Series and lost, they're still not to where the Yankees have been. It's about sustained success. That's the only way. Yeah, they could win the World Series and they'd steal the town for a little bit, but I'm talking about sustained success, and that's something that cannot be attained in 1 year or 2 years. That takes time, so I have, maybe joking with you, BT, we've done it before.
I honestly don't remember you saying that. I don't. I hear Loogie say it all the time.
That's
the whole
I'm saying.
Big brother, little brother thing, which I think is ridiculous.
Right.
But No, I honestly don't think I've heard you say that. And if you did, just knowing how you and I get after it, it was either in a mock or a jest or a...
Because I really don't believe it.
Well, I hear you, because that's something you can't buy. It's something that you've got to cultivate. You know, and right now the Mets are... They're just past the point of putting the seeds in the soil, making the playoffs and having a nice run last year. That was a little bit of water.
Right.
And then a big deluge with Juan Soto, and eventually you get more rain and those trees start to grow. And eventually, if things go the way Met fans want them to go, you will have a forest of prosperity. But right now, it is just hope, it is belief, and it is the it's things that are less quantifiable.
Well,
we know that.
Well, there's a difference between the big brother, little brother thing is stupid.
It's not the dumbest thing I hear.
Right. So, but what I keep saying, forget about who's big brother. What I keep saying is the Mets shouldn't accept being labeled the little brother.
Yeah, and by the way, I agree with that.
Okay, that's all that I've said about it. I could also feel that the Mets are in better position moving forward than the Yankees are, and there are reasons why I would believe that. You've gone over them yourself with the owner, with Stearns, getting Soto.
Carb system.
Yeah, without Soto, this whole thing wouldn't even be a conversation. So, right, where the Mets are going, I do prefer better than the Yankees, who have some older guys, aging contracts, maybe a little more reluctant to go over the top like Steve Cohen. That's different, though, than saying definitively the Mets are big brother and they own this town. Lugie could do that if he wants. That's not my bit. I'm not doing that. I do believe the Mets are going to be good, and I think that this is the beginning of a sustained run. I've also thought that before, and I've been proven wrong by the Mets.
It incites emotion for sure. Yankee fans perk up. He said, what? Oh, what? Oh, you're going to take it now? Okay, we'll see. Met fans, chest out. That's right. Here we go. It's our time, and I think that makes it fun.
How about Nimmo saying it?
I was going there. When Nimmo said it the other day, and something we talked a lot about on the show. Now, I mean, listen, the dynamic here with the fan base would be very interesting. Those of us who are already on a certain side, we know that. It's kind of like politics. But if the Mets are to do what some Met fans, well, all Met fans hope for, and some Met fans think that they will, well, then maybe the next generation's impacted more, because maybe some who could have been Yankee fans growing up will be raised as Met fans, whatever. And maybe you'll see a transition at some point. But it doesn't happen in a year. It doesn't happen at one splashy, press conference introducing Juan Soto. It takes time. And we'll see if the Mets are up for it.
We're taking your calls on both the Yankees and the Mets. Mets, of course, will open up later on today. They will be on the road. Speaking of which, I did get an update. We had Andy Pettit on before. And in case you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We had Aaron Boone to start the show, Andy Pettit as well. And I remember I was telling Pettit he kind of got lucky in Game 1 of the World Series, which is hard to believe, BT. 25 years.
Are you talking about Timo?
The 2000 World Series, with Zeal, who used to wear him out. And then Pettit took a little shot at Zeal, say, hey, tell Todd hit the ball a little further.
Didn't
next
have
time.
The oppo power, he said. Then he said that, too.
He said that?
He said hit the ball further. And then he said he should have pitched outside because Todd didn't have oppo power.
He's right about that. I mean, Zeal could hit one in the gap.
Yeah, Zeal was a good player.
Yeah, he wasn't going to hit, Piazza could go opposite field with the power. But anyway, hey, he made a mistake. Zeal wore him out, and I texted Todd that Pettit told him that.
Well, Todd taking bows? What's he got going on with Todd Wright?
He said he's right.
No,
he's wrong, Todd! That damn Timo Perez 25 years ago, I still can't let that go.
He cost you the game. There's no way around it.
And you said, it could have changed the entire landscape of that series.
Yeah. I mean, that was...
It was only a five-game series, but still it was a hard... Game 5 was close. Even Game 1, the Mets came back in. Game 2, I'm sorry. Game 2, the Mets came back in.
Yep.
It never felt real, but Jay Payton hit that home run off of Rivera down
Jay
the right
Payton
field line.
From Georgia Tech, Jay Payton. He played with Nomar and Veritek. That was their college team. Jay Payton, Nomar, and Veritek played college together and hit in sequential order with a metal bat.
And Payton was one of those guys who was jacked before that became a thing.
Yes, great bat speed, too.
And he can never stay healthy,
though. He never really put it all together. I always thought Jay Payton... I remember watching Jay Payton a lot coming up. I remember reading about him in Baseball America, at Georgia Tech. I was always intrigued by him. I thought he was going to be a star. And I watched him a lot with the Mets. And he did some good things, but... he wasn't, baseball's hard.
Piazza hit a two-run homer. If memory serves, I think the Mets were down 6-0, something like that. Piazza hit a two-run homer. This is obviously the Clemens-Piazza game.
Yep.
Piazza hit a two-run homer off of Jeff Nelson late in that game. A moonshot down the left field line here at the old stadium.
A little frisbee that didn't move.
And then Payton in the ninth. hit a right field three-run homer off of Mariano.
Off Mo.
And made it like 6-5, and they ended up losing 6-5. But anyway, point is, yes, that game one was intense.
Well, but here's the thing. So even though it was only a five-game series, I got to tell you, listen, we're never going to know what happened. And trust me, as a Yankee fan, I'm thrilled that the Yankees won that because we've still been hearing about this. And but if the Mets would have won the first game, and they probably should have, as we said,
yeah.
The pressure that Torrey talked about that was being applied to him by George, who was still very alive and still
fairly...
Think he
could have been fired?
I don't know if he would have been fired, not after 96, 98, 99. I'm not even implying that. I mean that George's presence, George didn't like losing the Mayor's Trophy game,
let alone
spring training games between the Yanks and the Mets, let alone game one or a World Series. So I don't know how it would have manifested itself. Maybe the players would have been immune to that, but I think that it could have made the Yankees tighter. It could have really made them play with less confidence if the Mets would have won the first game.
Yeah, and then remember, too, 2-3-2, Mets would have had three games at Shea after that. They needed to get a split. And then once the Yanks won up 2-0, you never felt like it was going to be a reality that the Mets – I never felt that way. You held out hope. Because think about what would have had to have happened. You would have had to win either all three and beat that Yankee dynasty three games in a row at Shea and then still get one of two, or – go 2 out of 3 at Shea, which, okay, could happen, and then win Game 6 and 7 on the road in Yankee Stadium. No way was that happening.
And at that point, Game 7 at Yankee Stadium still off limits until the Red Sox wound up changing that a couple of years after.
Right.
Where you come in here, Game 7, you're not going out with a win, or the old stadium, not here. The crazy thing, too, is as we're sitting here on opening day, and the Yanks and the Mets, and both teams have a lot of talent, both teams have some questions as well. And it wasn't an arrogance, and I'm sure it wasn't arrogance for some Yankee fans back then, but, you were so conditioned to win, even though they got tripped up by the Indians in 97 with Alomar taking Mo deep to right field on that Sunday night. You win it in 96, you win it in 98, you win it in 99. Going into that Subway Series with the Mets, and again, it wasn't like, oh, we're the Yankees. I never really operated. I mess around on the radio here, but I never really operated that way, like, oh, we're the Yanks, you're the Mets. That was never really my thing. Some people do it, whatever, have fun. But I'll tell you, if they were to meet in the World Series this year, the level of confidence for the Yankee fan now compared to then would be miles apart.
In a wrong way.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
You just assumed you were going to win because they always won.
Right.
And the Mets didn't. And I know the Mets didn't win the World Series last year, but they swept them in a Subway Series. You took Juan Soto, the changing dynamics a little bit. Like, the Yankee fan would be very uncomfortable.
You know what it is?
If there was a Subway, I would love it still.
You know what it is? Huh. Little brother's all grown up now.
Well, yeah, he's not all
big
grown
brother,
up until he pins Big Brother on the grass in the backyard and smacks him around.
Big Brother's been beating him down.
Yep.
All of a sudden, little brother's grown. He's got some muscles.
Yeah.
And now
he's doing a little shaving here and there. He's got a couple of hairs.
He's been hitting
up on
the gym. He's eating right.
I know.
It could be a little different story. And, I know we've talked about this as recently as last season, in season.
Yep.
That there was a collision course potentially for a Subway Series. And we got close. Got there. Mets got to the NLCS. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's ridiculous to predict those type of things. But I do feel probably the most confident maybe ever. Because in 2000, I don't remember ever saying it's going to be a Subway Series. It was just almost more like, holy cow, the Mets might go to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that was, for me, a younger fan.
Yes.
That didn't happen. I was, 6 or 7 in 86. So when they became good again in 99 and 2000, that was always the hope. But it was never, I never thought about the Subway Series until you kind of had to.
Uh-huh.
And then every year since, it's always, oh, that would be great or whatever. But I don't think I've ever felt like 2006, the Mets were very good, should have been to the World Series, should have won it. The Yankees weren't.
Uh-huh.
And then the majority of others, even 2015, all right, the Mets got there kind of out of nowhere. Yankees weren't there.
Yep.
I never. This is the first time, probably, I feel that it is as legit a possibility going into a season, maybe since 2000, that we get a Subway Series.
It's interesting, and I could see that. The way the Mets started a year ago, that obviously, and I don't think nobody really felt that way going into last
season.
That's
what I'm saying.
Clearly.
Barely,
to your
not
point.
Even a playoff team, really.
Yeah, true. I mean, most of us had the Mets win in high 70s, whatever, 78, 79. And I'm a couple of years older than Sal, for those who don't know, but I remember in the mid-80s, I'm like, And I don't even know if we use the expression Subway Series. Like, it's just been one of these creations, right. Even though it used to happen all the time in the 50s and with the Brooklyn Dodgers finally cracking through in 1955 against the vaunted Yankees and my dad finally getting his Dodgers that championship win. I mean, they lost every year. Point is, I remember in the mid-80s, even though the Yankees didn't have the pitching, the Mets were terrific, even in 84, 85, and obviously 86. And the Yankees had Ricky Henderson and Don Mattingly and Dave Winfield anchoring their lineup, not to mention Ron Guidry, Dave Rigetti, and some other, just to keep things moving. I could name the whole lineup, but I won't. It felt like there was a chance then. We just didn't communicate it that much. I feel like now it's more topical and more target.
Yeah, it could have happened a year ago, and I'm not saying it's going to. Like I said, I think it's tough. You look at the road in the National League, tough for the Mets, but both teams going in are on the same page where the expectation is World Series.
I agree. They got a chance. But let's get Allie real quick up in Mayapack, New York. Allie, BT and Sal, how are you?
Hey, guys. Great show. Thank you for taking the call.
Okay. What's up, Allie?
Just really excited about the Yankee season. Looking forward to seeing some of these kids step up. And I think they're going to step up. I'm looking forward to it. And also in terms of Jazz, I think it's much ado about nothing. I think it's more, like you said, maybe a little bit of immaturity at the time that he was with the Marlins. But I hold more water in the fact that what his teammates think about him. And the fact of, is he going to be a team player? He came over, he went to third base. This year he went to second base. I think he's the type of guy that just wants to win, wants to have fun, has a lot of passion for the game.
Yep.
And I think we're making more of it than what it is. And I'm just looking forward to a great baseball season.
All right. Thank you, Al. Good,
thank you for the call, Allie. No, look, this is a big year for Jazz Chisholm. Last year he came in and Yankee fans were excited about him, the shiny new toy, right? Everybody gets excited about the new additions that their team makes. And when he first got here, he had an immediate impact, hitting big home runs left and right for the Yanks. And now, to your point, BT, he's going to be here for a full season and he's going to be scrutinized, not because of anything other than his performance on the field.
He's on the Yankees.
He's the Yankees' starting second baseman. He talked a big game last year saying, we expect to win the World Series, blah, 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 blah. He wasn't very good in the postseason. Jazz has something to prove here. He's been an inconsistent player in his career. I think there's high hope and high expectations for Jazz Chisholm from the Yankees themselves, from the Yankee fans. He's replacing Gleyber Torres, who was a good offensive player. Even at his worst, he was still a good offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to learn a lot about what Jazz is made of this year.
I do, too. You know, for too often, the Yankees were very corporate. You know, and that's when they get into that real bland, vanilla, antiseptic kind of roster with no juice and no live wires, that's what bores me. I love players like Jazz Chisholm. I do. Now, I love maybe more what they represent. I think there's another level for him to go up as a player. Again, he's on base 315. It's not good enough. But he does walk around like he's been in the 40-40 club with an OPS of 950 for three
years. That's what I'm saying.
The walk's a little bit, you know, a little bit more loud than the actual production here. I don't know what his ultimate ceiling is, but I think you need, especially in baseball, Sal, where it's a six-month grind. You basically play every day. You're with these guys every day. It's monotonous. Now, again, we've been here since 10 o'clock in the morning. Since 9 o'clock in the morning. But I would say around 10:40, some players started to trickle on the field and long toss and do some stretching. It is a long – it's fun for us.
Yeah.
But
it's a long day.
It's a long, monotonous day, and it's a long, monotonous season. You need guys like Jazz to keep it loose, pump up the music, rock the gold. Let's go.
I'm a big personality guy. You know that. So I love that personality. And it shouldn't be everybody cookie cutter in a clubhouse. You want to have some of those flashy personalities, outgoing personalities, keep things loose and fun.
Imagine 25 DJ LeMahieu's walking around.
No.
Be like 25 zombies.
Put us to sleep.
Yeah, it would.
The Mets lineup for today, and there is a little bit of a surprise. Now, they're facing a lefty.
Lefty,
Framber Valdez.
All right, so I'm going to say that's going to impact Brett Beatty, who's not going to start at second
base. Yeah. Luis Angel Acuña is in there.
Wow. Okay,
who was the last person, it seems, to make the team.
No, not seems. He absolutely was. Matter of fact, Stern spoke about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Where they solidified a couple of arms to make out the 25-man roster.
Didn't name Acuña.
Did not name Acuña. He had said about a week or so ago that they were maybe going to try to find somebody else to play some middle infield. They did not. So Acuña not only sticks, he gets the start.
Which, again, it shows you. I mean, it gives me goosebumps, though. It's opening day. It is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But all that Brett Beatty talk, all the hype and hope off of the big spring, and he's going to get an opportunity, already. Now, Valdez is one of the tougher lefties in the game. Uh-huh. Okay, all right, but are you
don't want to open that way as a lefty, man.
I guess. Ugh. Yeah, fair enough. I mean,
that's
guess.
That's a tough sell. So you think you would have just played, you would have played Beatty?
Well, no, I don't mind it, and I like Acuna better than I do Beatty.
Uh-huh.
But think about it. The Mets waited till look, Acuna's the last guy on the roster.
Yep.
It just shows you that the game has evolved so differently. Back in our day, the 25th man, now it's the 26th man. You wouldn't consider starting him on opening day ever.
I know.
And then.
Yeah, no, so that's true.
So he's the 26th man, and he gets the start because of a lefty-righty thing where I worry about Beatty. If Beatty's going to be a player, he's going to have to hit lefties at some point.
Well, you know why? Because there's no value. There's no value with Beatty from a defensive perspective. If Beatty could pick it, maybe he proves that at some point, he would probably, well, more likely get the start against a tough lefty like Valdez. But we'll get back to the Mets stuff. We'll get back to everything we're doing here. Over-unders as well. Look who has settled in, fresh off some college hoops and a couple of weeks down in Tampa, getting that that voice ready as he debuts today, taking over for John Sterling, the great Dave Sims. And you got to be pumped. How are you feeling, man?
Pretty darn good.
Are you nervous at all?
Not nervous, but that good exhilaration that you want to have before they go 3-2-1 go.
Oh, yeah.
And I know undoubtedly at probably 2:59, 3 o'clock, it'll start to ramp up some more. You know, you got to, like a lot of things, you got to pace yourself. I got up this morning. I said, I got to stay up. I go back to bed. Finally get up about 6 o'clock, do some notes. Jumped on the Peloton at about 8 o'clock and just sprinted. Did 15 minutes just like to take an edge off.
Who'd you have? A little cat?
I just put on 15 minutes.
Okay.
And I was following up on texts and whatnot. And I said, just go. And if you go hard, great.
Yeah.
And I wound up going hard. It was terrific.
You've done plenty of games, obviously, doing this a very, very long time. Opening day at the stadium, taking over for John Sterling. This is now your team, you and Susan, the voices of the New York Yankees. What does this mean for you personally, for your career, all of those different things?
Oh, it's huge. It puts a big stamp on it. It's at this stage of my life and my career, great time to be here. You know, still a good team. You know, pitching's not what we thought it was going to be. But the athleticism, the hitting, great. What it means to me means so much because I have had a long career and I've done just about everything. And to be here in New York, be back home in New York, and to do this, wow, it's special.
Always wanted this, and you know you can't accomplish if you don't dream. You've got to have a compass that is going to direct you somewhere.
Yeah, and circumstances, you know,
for sure
presented themselves, and I had a great time in Seattle. 18 years, a lot of friends, a lot of good colleagues, a lot of good times. Not enough. One playoff, not enough.
Oh, dude. You got a lot of run, though, with that one playoff
run.
Yeah, that camera on you was good.
In 21, it looked like we were going to make it, and then that was a Saturday night. Haniger gets a big hit, and then it was over in the first inning the next morning. And then Cal gets us in the next year, upset Toronto, and had Houston to this day. When I talked to Dusty, we had you. He said, "Yeah, you let us go. We were scared to death of you."
You know
what's going to happen this year now? Yanks Mariners collision course in
like
the
old days.
Yeah,
I got people breaking my chops back in the Pacific Northwest saying that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, they better get some offense before they start thinking about playoffs. Here,
can you make
an offseason move, Seattle?
Not for hitting wise, they didn't.
I know.
And pitching is still. I mean, Kirby's out with the shoulder. A kid from Rye.
Yeah.
That's a staff.
Yep, I know.
That is a big time.
Is it the best
staff.
Of baseball staff?
You can make that argument. Yeah.
Well, outside of the
Dodgers, but I mean, you know, the American League for sure. If that team, I said it on the air last year. If we could hit just 245, you know, 230, which was the league average.
Yeah.
It's over. We win it. But we hit 217 going into the last month. 214.
Didn't Alonso hit 217?
Yeah,
we gave him criticism. Mean, same thing with the team that hits 217.
Believe you have no idea how bad that was.
No idea. Well, you're going to get some offense here. That is for sure.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Bellinger about that. I said, dude, you know, right down the line. I said, no. I'm staying up the middle. I don't want to get caught in that. If I get one, great. I'm staying up the middle. I thought that was good.
Easier said than done.
He says that.
Agreed.
Now, Soto stayed with his approach, going foul pole to foul pole, but a lot easier said than done. You watch baseball forever.
Yeah, no question. Just like it's not easier when they had the shift. And the guys are throwing a million miles an hour, and hey, why can't you hit it to the open space? I get that. But that's at least the approach. I mean, it's a game of failure. Everybody knows that. So, but the fact that he has that approach, I think, is fruitful, to say the least.
Last time we had you on, it was before you went down to spring training.
Yeah.
What'd you learn down there watching this
game? Ben Rice can hit. Austin Wells can hit. It's spring training. I know I don't want to get carried away, but it's a good sign. I was impressed with Rice's power. I think Dominguez is going to be all right. I think that the fact that, you know, he's a switch hitter, he doesn't look like he's a fast runner, but he can move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to hit. And as long as he stays healthy, I think that's going to be – when I talk to the coaches, James Rawlson was raving about Jez Chisholm. The manager, Aaron Boone, said he's the closest thing in terms of swing-wise, in terms of the way the swing looks, to Ken Griffey Jr. Now, you know how much of a rave that is. So, I mean, the guy's got unbelievable power.
So it's also a little bit of a stretch.
I mean, it's not base percentage.
No, I said swing.
I know you.
I know, not results.
No, I said swing.
You may run like Hayes, but you hit like
right. Right, exactly. I'm just saying what it was. Just saying what it looks
I got
like.
You.
The potential is there.
Because it's a loose, optically, I know what you mean. We're messing around. It's a loose, explosive swing.
James was saying that Volpe had a great spring, barreling the ball up consistently.
Yep.
Yeah, I want to see what Cabrera does at third. But I'm pretty encouraged. I'm very encouraged by this team. I think Rodon has learned how to be here, what it takes to be here.
Took him a year.
And that, hey, you know what? Better late than never. That's the way it goes.
Ed Whitson couldn't figure it out back in the day.
Right, exactly. And he, when I talked to him, when I first met him a couple of weeks ago and went down, he owned it. He says, hey, it wasn't any good that first year.
Okay,
you know,
good.
I get it. I think I understand what it takes to be here. Boney talked about the fact that he has had tremendous growth. I think that's going to be sensational. Freed looks like he's mature beyond his years. I mean, he does have a lot under his belt. He's got a ring, blah, 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 blah. But that's the real deal right there.
I think the Yanks are going to catch the ball real well. I think you go Goldschmidt, upgrade over Rizzo. Jazz, upgrade over Torres. Judge, upgrade over Soto and Wright. Bellinger, upgrade over Judge and center. Obviously, Volpe's got to hit more, but he can pick it. Third base, I think they'll catch it well enough. I don't know how much they'll hit. And if Dominguez is even a tick above adequate,
just
eventually,
be good.
They're gonna be a very good defensive team.
Just be good. You don't have to be. You're not going to be. Who was the guy that was at Kansas City forever?
Jesus. Alex Gordon?
Alex,
where we go?
Gordon.
Yeah, Gordon.
Yeah, he's not going to be Alex Gordon, but give me a reasonable facsimile. I'll be happy.
Yeah.
What do you think about the AL East? A lot of people are picking the Red Sox as maybe the team to beat in the division, or at least the Yankees' toughest competition.
It will be the toughest competition. Crochet is a monster. That was in Seattle. First time they were in last year. 13 punch outs, and it was no low contender. I mean, it was just no contest at all. And he just pumping, you know, fastball, slider, fast. Good luck. He's that good. I know Giolito went down. They're going to swing it. The Durant kid is, whew, I like him a lot.
Me too.
I like him. You know, do they have enough to go all the way? I still think the Yankees are a tick or two better in the beauty. This will be my first time really experiencing Yankees Red Sox and all that goes in with that. You know, I've been, you know, on the periphery watching, and even when I was at the Daily News, yeah, I didn't get to cover those series, but it's going to be nuts.
It's been a while since it's been a thing. The last couple of years,
it's definitely died down. There's no question.
Yeah.
I think it's going to come back though,
right,
this year. I really do.
Well, I'll tell you, back to the Crochet thing, and this may be a bigger issue for the Yankees big picture, which will be addressed with Stanton's return eventually and maybe a move. Crochet against a lefty-laden lineup, that doesn't exactly make me feel good from a Yankee perspective.
Precisely my point.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big dude, too. And he's like all big guys. He's like in your living room after he releases the ball. You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And he's throwing 100. And a legit 100. And that, I don't get caught up. Hey, he throws 100. Can he hit his spots? All right? That dude's throwing 100 and hitting the spots. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get all these guys. Somebody goes, he's throwing 95, but he can't throw for strikes.
Yeah, Plunk.
He's out in the third inning. He's out in the second inning. I don't want to hear it.
I'm fascinated by the scheduling, the partnering, all that stuff. Are you scheduled right now to do all the games, all the road trips?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm all in.
And then take me inside a little bit here. You and Susan, obviously great friends, partners. Is there, like, whether it's home or on the road, a window open? You prefer windows open? She
maybe
going to
find out today. I mean, I came fortified. Open. I got the North
Face. You got your jacket on. Yeah.
And I got an overcoat, and I got a skull cap. I'll be good.
So
come on, that's a veteran guy here.
You're right. You follow her lead.
Yeah, she's got a little bit more, a little more time here, but Hey, I used to do football games in Green Bay with the with the windows open.
Right? Why?
Bad you like weather. Getting that feel then?
Well, I went with Coach Madsen. You got to feel the whole thing.
No, you don't. If you play it, you do. If you're broadcast, you don't.
I did in Pittsburgh. And some places you didn't have any choice.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just got to, if you prepared properly and you brought the right clothes, you're good. Yeah.
Well, I've got a question about Susan as well, a little bit different. Let's say in the event Susan should take a day or two off this year. I don't know if you know, but I did step into the Yankee booth
this guy's
a couple times.
Right,
hey, listen, hold on.
I haven't even spoken my first word in the opening day.
No, I'm not trying to get rid of you. I'm trying to jump in for Susan when she needs a day off. If they come to you and they say, hey, Dave, you know, Susan's got a wedding in Florida for a best friend or a relative, and we want somebody to jump in. We're thinking, you know, that Tierney guy, you know, you going to give him the stamp, or no?
I do give him points for having some gum to do it.
That's
he
right.
Does this all the time.
I get some points.
I want to crawl under the table, but he does this.
Yeah, you know, you advocate for yourself. I get it. Yeah, we'll see.
And I've known you 20 years going back to the Big East days at the Guard, man, when you were showing me the ropes. True story. I remember Dave, like you might not remember this, but you were a very generous broadcaster. This is actually a little more than 20 when I literally first started doing stuff. And I remember you, just little things that probably don't even resonate with you, but you were very giving of your time that I remember just how to conduct. An interview post game with a coach, and I was always very appreciative. So I'm sincerely happy for you.
Thank you. I enjoy paying it forward. I had guys, I'm going to name drop here, but Dick Enberg, Vince Scully, Marty Brenneman, Marty Glickman, Marv Albert, Costas. A lot of guys paid it forward with me, and guys back in Philly when I was down there. You got to pay it forward. And I've learned a lot. You know, I was fresh out of college when I got here to New York. Didn't know anybody. I had an aunt here, and I lived around the corner from me, but that was it. And I got thrown in the deep end, and son, you got to swim out.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, Sims, this copy's not very good. I think you need to rewrite it. You want to try this, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, back at the Daily News when you had World War II and Korea War veteran guys who were depression children, who hard scrabble dudes.
Yikes.
And, you know, just hard asses, man.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from those cats, man. You know, knock down, pick yourself up, and let's keep going. That's one of the reasons why I'm still here.
And this is not an easy spot. It's a great spot for you, obviously. Great job, but not easy when you're replacing a legend. I'm sure you're tired of hearing about it. I know you love John, but I'm sure you're tired of hearing about, oh, John Sterling, and you're replacing John. Have you talked to him at all? And when do you feel like you're, is it today, this is it,
again, love for John, no question. Go back to 77 when he was with the Nets. I've seen him at a couple of dinners, and that's it. I mean, and we had a couple conversations. We didn't have any depth. Hey, I want you to do this.
Right.
Like, mutual respect was huge, huge. And they were, you know, and he even said, he was with somebody, he said, I would tell Dave to be himself.
Right.
That's what I'm rolling with.
Right.
You know, I'm not daunted by, you know, I'm not blown away. I mean, I essentially replaced Dave Niehaus in Seattle. I replaced Jack Spector here in New York at WNBC before you guys were probably even born. So, I mean, I have the same kind of confidence you do, BT, and I was raised that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, I get the, you know, you're in the game, I'm going to do my best. And I'm trying to make it great.
And by the way, if I slip up, I'm going to make sure the next time is even better.
Exactly.
What do you think? I mean, everything's obviously important here. Have you thought about, I know it's not scripted, it's got to be organic, but have you thought about nailing the first home run call or the first Yankee, like the final out for the first win? Do you even think about that stuff?
I did, and I said, come on, just you've been living organic your entire broadcast career, you know? I wrote down a couple of words that I want to make sure I get in.
Uh-huh.
Mainly at the beginning of the show, I mean. But, I always say, if I remembered scripts that well, I'd be a caddying for Denzel.
Yeah. I hear you.
You know what I mean?
It's the best way to be.
You're not an actor.
Yeah. Right. If I remembered, if I was good at remembering Shakespeare and all that good stuff, I mean, I would have been in, tried to be in his orbit. Because I'm comfortable being in front of people.
There you go.
But sports is what I was raised on, and You know, that's where I'm supposed to be.
Enjoy the day, man.
Hey, man.
Long
wait.
Well deserved, Dave.
Thanks, man. Good to see you guys.
Congratulations, sir. Good luck.
Still got that good handshake, too. You got to dig in when you shake this guy's hand.
Let me tell you something.
He's locked in.
When you cover the NBA and the NFL, if you don't get it in there, you're going to get hurt.
You're going to get eaten alive, and you're going to get eviscerated, and you lose your man card for life.
You're going to get hurt. I have said hello to so many D tackles, Reggie White, and cats like that. Yo, Reg, what's up? Hey, man. Oh, my God. So I only took once. If you get in there and I give it a good squeeze and you don't do it, well, what can I tell you? You learn something.
Go get him, Dave. All the fan. Thank you to Dave Sims. He'll be on the call with Susan here in just a little bit. Make sure you stay tuned.